Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode.
Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Nui Tech People podcast. This time around, we've got Cole Cornford. Cole's been in the security game for a decent amount of time. Cole's worked at companies like Westpac. He's worked at Change.org. He's worked for the ATO. So he's got a bunch of experience in a bunch of different domains, and he's got a lot to say. Super passionate about the community in Newcastle, super passionate about growing cybersecurity in Newcastle. Really good episode. Hope you enjoy it. Cheers. Righto, Cole, welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast.
Thank you for having me here.
Awesome. Look, first things first, who are you? What do you do? Let's keep it broad.
Yeah, it is pretty broad, ain't it? So I'm Cole. I'm the director of a small cybersecurity consultancy called Galah Cyber. What we're good at is making clear, actionable advice for small businesses, but also having a technical capability to do the big end of town as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. This is a hard question to start with. How did Galah start?
Well, it's a pretty unique story in that not that unique for a lot of folk, but I was going to move overseas to go work for a tech company, a big F if you has a lot of ace on the end of it. So, you know, it's got a different name nowadays.
Yeah, I was going to say, not the big F anymore.
but yeah, that didn't eventuate because I wanted on site. So I found a different tech company that was the polar opposite of FX called Change, which is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. They let me work remote. And during that time, I was always under the expectation that I'd be able to move to Canada, move to San Francisco, just have the good tech boy life right in Silicon Valley. That never eventuated because of COVID, but I did meet my wife during the pandemic, so which led me to make the decision that, you know what, maybe I don't need to go over there. It's like Australia can actually do really well in tech as well, so why not? We'll stick around here. So I quit Change because I didn't like getting up at 4 a.m.
Yep, understandable.
It's very hard.
Yep, that's fair.
Yeah, a lot of folk I spoke with who've since left the company said that they just didn't understand how I'd consistently do that. And it's just, well, you know, you didn't have much else to do during the pandemic, did you, right? So, but when things started to get a little bit back to normal, I was thinking, well, I just kind of want to do a 9-to-5 kind of gig, but I've always wanted to own my own business, and mm-hmm. I felt like it was just a great time to just start a consultancy and start doing it because I know a lot of folk in the AppSec industry, and like remote gives me so many opportunities to just go out, talk to all sorts of folk on Zoom and just do my work from home, right? So compared to all my other jobs where I had to be on site and just like traveling between workplaces, which would eat up most of my time, now it's like, yeah, I'll just download everything off Git and let's go.
Awesome. Awesome. Another hard question. What's your vision for the company? What are you actually, I mean, money is what you're trying to achieve, profitability in the company.
It's a mix, actually. So like, of course, money is important for pretty much any business owner. But for me, one thing that really got me going was about 10 years ago, the Necknock City Council gave me $2,500, right?
Yep.
To study at university. And at the beginning of the pandemic, they canceled the Merrill scholarships because they couldn't get business sponsorship. And I thought that was a bit disappointing. So I wanted to give back to the community where I could, especially in the Newcastle region, which is why I really got involved with like, you know, Newcastle Cyber, the Nui Slack, and just a lot of like kind of philanthropism of it, you know? So why not? Going to be sponsoring a few awards this way out Cessnock way because like, you know, that money makes a big difference for like a uni student, you know? I got like 100 stunner meals out of that scholarship, yeah. You know? Like that's meals for 3 months. Not great meals, but
it keeps you moving.
It keeps me moving, right? So, and I want other students to maybe not have 100 stunner meals, but at least like you know, they can buy textbooks and a laptop and like look after themselves and not just like sitting there worrying about money on a day-to-day basis. They can focus on their career. So, yeah. So that's one opportunity is like, you know, financial support for students in the like regional area. But I really want to help the university just grow tech in Newcastle. So I'm working very closely with Karen at the uni to help make the IT program get stronger graduates who come out with more technical skills, because that's something that I had to really invest my own personal time in at university compared to most of my cohort. Mm-hmm. And so I really want to help those people have better outcomes there. And yeah, just locally, like cybersecurity is not really common in Newcastle. Don't think so. Lots of small businesses have approached me and said like, oh, what do I do? It's like, well, usually the pattern is relatively similar, which is, you know, patch things, turn on multi-factor authentication, strong passwords, but they don't have someone to ask and contextualize the advice to locally. Mm. So I'm giving back to the community in that way as well by trying to give free advice to as many small businesses who ask for it. So, cool. Which, I don't know, those are my ways of trying to help out, but I think it's better than just like making money and then going and buying a house in Potts Point or something, you know?
That's, yeah, fair enough. We'll get the plug out of the way a bit early. I know you're hiring people. Who do you want to talk to?
Yeah, software engineers. yeah, because the type of consultancy I do is either relatively simple advice to small businesses. Mm-hmm. So this is great for people who are just starting their like careers and are interested in cybersecurity, because the advice is not complex. You just need to be approachable and you need to help people handhold them through something that's a very scary topic, right? Mm. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, I'm looking for principals. So you be good at what you do, you can communicate clearly, and I'm going to get you in and do lots of engagements with NASDAQ and ASX listed companies. So let's go.
Cool. And presumably fully remote, work wherever?
Yeah. Just you let me know what you kind of want. We'll get you going. So nice and easy, really. I try to be a flexible employer. A few things like kind of differentiate us a bit is we want to give folk a bit more leave. So instead of 20 days, if you take 20 days in a year, we'll give you an extra week. So, which to me, it probably suits a lot of people who just want to have extended vacations. And like, you want to go learn stuff? I will make time and pay for you to go to conferences, get training, probably up to about $4,000 to $5,000 a year. So just come work for me. It's great.
Awesome. So changing tack a little bit, you grew up here, you kind of went and worked elsewhere. Can you tell me a little bit about that process and I guess to some extent what was missing in the Newcastle community?
I'd say like number one is probably jobs and education, really. Like, so I have always been interested in cybersecurity from, and this is going to be a little bit of a nerd plug, but I like video game hacking. So I don't do it. I'm ethical. I'm a good man. So, but I love to learn about it.
Yeah.
So all sorts of old school games like Zelda and Mario. That's what I love, just seeing people like finish games fast and create exploits and glitches to help them achieve that, right? And that was where I really got into the whole cybersecurity thing, because if you think about it, a video game is the same as an application, right? They both run code. It's just one of them is a little bit more fun to tinker with than the other.
Yes.
So now I will be honest, I was going into Newcastle with not really particularly much idea about where I want to be in the future. And over time, I just like kept gravitating more and more towards security and got solidified with a course at the uni called data security, right? Mm. At the time, I think that was the only course that actually had any remote cybersecurity stuff going on at all. And it's a very niche topic within cybersecurity. Hmm. So, because, you know, we do care about data protection, but as security practitioners, we often say, cool, cryptography, we'll leave that to the mathematicians and we'll just follow the advice, right? Which is what I ascribe to, because I'm terrible at math. So, But going back to the original question is because there weren't too many firms locally who were hiring people specifically in this space, there's not much of a gap to actually get into it. So I had to go work for the federal government for a few years, and I did rotations in different places. It was a grad program, it's how they are, and ended up landing in the application security space, right? And yeah, that kind of set me up. So I had a lot of experience with static analysis tools, dynamic scanning, interaction with risk and governance across a huge enterprise, and then moved to just different industries like telecommunications, banking, fintech, big tech, just all sorts of clients, right? And they all approach security very differently. But if I didn't get initial foothold in the application security space within the federal government, I'd probably be stuck with this kind of idea that data security is security, and that's not a great place to be, right? Now, I do know there's other employers locally, but most of them are in the, I think, defense, and the problem with it's just a different career path, right? Yes. So like what you would approach for a defense oriented like company is completely different to a consumer focused one. Mm-hmm. So they just diverge. So there's different ways to do security locally. It's just those avenues weren't really exposed early on.
We'll say 10-ish years on, do you think a prospective university student is in a better position to pursue a security career?
Better? I think it's better. The university has definitely taken feedback on board to provide a lot more cybersecurity like courses. Mm-hmm. Some of them are focused on network security, which is great if you're going towards a defense sector. Some are focused a bit more on software security, which is good for me. And a little bit around governance, risk, compliance, pen testing, all of those different things. But we're seeing a lot of tech firms popping up in the Newcastle region because, hey, we've got good beaches and we're cheaper than Sydney. So
for now.
we're almost Sydney too, right?
Yes. Yeah. Pretty much. And so, if the fast rail happens,
So I just think there are a lot more opportunities for people to pursue cybersecurity out this way, and especially with remote. But that said, remote opportunities are not great for juniors to be learning skills, as far as I'm concerned. So that's why I really wanted to create a pathway for juniors to come into my business and then get exposed to different types of cybersecurity practices. Mm-hmm. Because, we do strategy, we do advice, we do technical consulting in cloud, DevOps, and application security. What more could you ask for, really? Oh, yeah, NetSec and pen testing. We don't do that.
But there's enough places around that do. So you can have that need served elsewhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of companies available in Australia that do penetration testing, but that's not a place that I want to be playing in.
The Newcastle tech community, we've all seen quite a lot of growth in the last few years. But cybersecurity, as you mentioned, still a really small industry locally. What can the tech community be doing locally to bring more people into cybersecurity? How do we actually grow that community, for lack of a better word?
Oh, that's a challenging question. I think the focus actually would probably be on employing more software engineers rather than cybersecurity professionals, right? Because dedicated cybersecurity professionals are really good if you have those really big firms. Like we've got the banks locally, we have a health insurance provider. Those places are great for employing what we'd call line two risk, which is people who are good at telling people what to do, but they're not implementing the actual solutions, right? But if you want to introduce more security practices into smaller tech companies that don't have the budget or the time to bring someone on board, then it's best to get your software engineers upskilled and bring more of them on board, because you're going to have to. It's something I advocate for quite a lot, especially in my larger companies I work for, is that software quality is completely underpins cybersecurity in the application security space. If you don't have a good architecture for your application that meets your business needs, you haven't thought through how you're going to manage your source code from cradle to grave, and you haven't really considered about training your developers to make sure they use the right methods for implementing things, then you're going to introduce bugs, right? Default patterns are the way to go, and having engineers implement them is important.
Hmm. One thing we haven't kind of brought up, we both organise the Newcastle Cybersecurity Group. It's not just us. We've got Andrew and Jay as well, which we probably shouldn't leave them out of it. What made you get involved in that to begin with?
Oh, Jay initially. He was like, well, this exists. Come along to a few of them. And I kind of graduated into more of an organizing position after a few events because, well, you know, I started doing a couple of technical talks and just figured that it's important to, you know, demonstrate that there is a big community of people who care about security locally. What can we do to get this going? And I wanted to have consistency. I wanted people to feel welcome. And I wanted it to just, you know, have a bunch of like-minded security practitioners come along and have a beer or something, you know, just chill. It's those kind of communities tend to exist in other places around Australia as well. Sec talks and seasides are the most common ones I've been to. But the focus usually on those ones is offensive security, and it's not particularly welcoming, especially for new people. So I really wanted to make sure that we could turn NCSG into something that is good for people from all sorts of demographics, whether you're an ASD, like ex-ASD person who's just got lots of signals intelligence background, or you're a graduate of the University of Newcastle and you just want to learn a bit about what cross-site scripting is, or I don't know, threat and awareness people who just like to learn about what the cool stuff happening in the world is, you know? And that's why it's not like an OWASP branded event or anything. I just wanted to be focused on Newcastle and serving Newcastle people.
What role do you think NCSG has in growing cybersecurity in Newcastle? What role do you think community groups in general have in growing the community here?
Dude, it's so important. We have to do it because when I was like around, I didn't even know that a lot of these existed. I think the only one that was really prominent was NDC or NCG, Newcastle Coders Group. And that's expanded into lots of niche ones, right? Yeah. And that's really good because it means that you can find your people, right? And having a shared interest makes it really easy for people to network and find the other people I can help them with, like problems they're having in their workplace, or to chat through and get, you know, network with folk who, if you're looking for a job, you have an entryway into a place that would be, you know, incredibly intimidating if you didn't do that in the first place, right? And you get to learn from some of the best professionals, right? Because Newcastle isn't a slouch. We've got some really talented folk here, right? Like, I don't know why we're not just like bringing more and more cool speakers on board and just doing it as often as we can, besides COVID. But yes. Yeah, I just want to make sure that like anyone who comes along to it feels welcome and that they get value out of it and that they get to meet lots of cool people so that they can share their experiences and hopefully find better jobs and improve security broadly across Newcastle. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a software engineer, you're a CIO, you're just someone, a university student, come along, learn. It takes all types of cybersecurity. It's not just a security conference.
Awesome. Who do you think should attend that probably isn't attending at the moment?
I should say everybody, but nah, that's definitely not going to be the case. I think it depends on the talk that we have, right? Because the governance, risk, and compliance talks are really good, but they're not very good if you're a software engineer, right? Because the relevance to your day-to-day job is going to be so far removed, it's very hard for you to get value out of it. Same with like going to a penetration testing like talk is probably not the most useful for the GRC folk who would not really understand the technical details in a lot of circumstances, right? So I do think there's value if it's outside of your discipline. You do go to a few of those ones because you could just pick up all sorts of things that you can apply. Like, you know, in Agile, I talk about T-skilling. Yeah. Get in there and get T-skilled, right?
Yeah.
But also just like broadly people who are just like starting out at university, at TAFE, it's just good to get exposure to a lot of different people. I think that it's underserved as far as networking goes, and you have such a friendly group of people willing to tell you anything, because even though it's cybersecurity, you just have lots of professionals at different stages of their lives who are willing to impart their wisdom from their wisdom teeth directly to you, right? So do it. Take some.
Yeah. One thing I experience in my role a lot is talking to graduates and graduates really not understanding the, I guess, first steps they should take when it comes to networking, when it comes to you know, building that community around them. What do you say to those people trying to get into the space? Maybe not sure if they should attend an event because it's, you know, a group of 40 people who they know none of them. It's a subject in which they probably have little to no knowledge about. It can be an intimidating environment. So what do you say to them?
Yeah, look, I'm a naturally outgoing person. And the first few different events I went to, I kind of sat in the corner and just listened to the speakers. And I didn't talk to the guy with the green hair and the mohawk in the corner who is the presenter because he terrified me. And that's all right. You can come along and be a passive observer until you get the confidence to go out and actually reach people. And there's a good chance that someone's going to be talking about something that's interesting to you. So you can just find your way to merge into the circle, like, oh, hey, man, how you doing? I'm Cole. I'm learning. Can I chat with you? Almost everybody will be, you know, welcoming and would love to have you join a conversation. So don't be scared of turning up to the events outside of your risk tolerance for COVID, of course.
Very true.
But it's I think it's okay to approach people like speakers, anyone at the event, and ask them. I don't think we've really ever had people who are disruptive to my knowledge.
No.
Yeah. So, and but that's me as an outgoing person. As an introvert, I wouldn't really be too comfortable. So you could just sit at the back of the room, listen to the talk, get some knowledge from it, and then leave. Like, you don't have to do the networking part. And while I think that will serve you worse because you're just learning some, you know, content from
just
the talk.
Bits and pieces.
Yeah. I think the real value comes from, like, speaking with people after the main event and just learning about their lived experiences.
Yeah. And I think something to add there, it's sort of, it's implied that if you're attending a meetup as a senior individual, like if, you know, if you've got C in your title in some way, shape or form, if you're a senior, whatever, you're kind of going there expecting that someone will hit you up for advice. So people that are there, they're pretty open to talk anyway. They're pretty comfortable imparting any sort of wisdom they have. So don't feel like you're intruding or anything like that. It is, I mean, NCSG especially, it's a super welcoming community. I know when we host events at the Stag, we're there until 11 o'clock and there's like a group of 10 of us still just like sitting there chatting. And I don't think that happens in most other meetups.
Yeah.
Last thing on NCSG, any speakers you want to get in? Any particular topics you want to cover?
Oh, that's interesting.
You got a dream list?
I don't really have a dream list because what I really want to do is try to focus on local companies as much as possible, right? So I guess my dream list would be anyone from the banks locally, like just come in and talk about whether it's your technical security controls or your governance, just come do that, share the knowledge of the community, meet other community members, and mining and defense as well. Because they're a bit underserved in NCSG from what I've seen too. And they're a huge part of Newcastle's industry. And I know that mining takes security quite seriously and defense is defense, right? I can't, it's a bit outside of my ballpark defense. I've chosen not to move down that sector, but I do think that there's a lot of insight and value we can take from those places. So, yeah.
So we'll shift gears a little bit and go down the education route, which is always an interesting one. How did you actually get into this space? So you studied, what degree did you study?
I studied a Bachelor of IT at the University of Newcastle. At the time, the degree was separated into three components where you had your core courses of 80 units, your directive courses and your electives, right? And how I structured my degree was very technical. So I basically only had like 20 to 30 units of fun subjects. The electives were almost entirely computer science, and my directed courses were about like web engineering, data security, just all sorts of techie things, right? So when I graduated from the university, I had a very strong technical foundation, right? But I also know a lot of other people who graduated at the same time as me, who like structured the degree so that they could do the bare minimum IT and had 160 units of party, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
So that's changed. I believe the universities updated their syllabus for the 2022 cohort so that it's very difficult now to get an IT degree without doing IT. So.
Yeah. Good. Great. Kind of throwing you right into the weeds with this one.
That's all right.
Security professional or prospective security professional trying to get into it, should they do university?
I think university teaches some really critical concepts, especially around like basic programming, but also why you need to do certain types of programming. But the foundations of like software architecture, the foundations of just how different protocols work, foundations of like Big O notation and data structures, that stuff you can learn online, but when you're doing a cybersecurity course online, it usually focuses you very heavily on how to use tooling, not on fundamentals. And in my job, fundamentals are almost like the most important thing. So I would prefer to go and hire someone who can explain different layers of DNS to me, who can tell me what, like how a, you know, TCP handshake works in detail, and just explain to me what happens when they send a web request to google.com, right? But I'm not going to go out there and be particularly happy with someone who's learned just like how to run a couple of different pen testing tools, because anyone can, you know, write a script if they just copy it from the internet, but it's not value for the business, right? Mm. So, and that spooks me. I really don't subscribe to folk just learning how to use Nmap or Graudit or Fortify and just interpreting the results and flipping it over to the poor development teams to sort out. And if you do that, it's a bad outcome for both parties, right?
Mm.
You get uncontextualized results, which development teams do not want, and you get someone who doesn't understand how to explain what the results mean for that business. So it sucks.
It's like the standard uni VTAFE problem, right? Where university gives you a really strong foundation. They won't necessarily teach you how to do the thing, but they'll teach you the process and give you enough background awareness to understand how to find out how to do the thing.
Yep.
Whereas TAFE, they'll give you the procedure. The context and theory around it is maybe a bit lacking. I think you kind of need a mix of both in a company, but I can understand your answer 100%.
Yeah. Like I can give you an example, which is, funnily enough, a video game hacking example.
Sure.
So it's very short,
okay.
But basically it involves understanding how binary works, right? Which at TAFE, they may not teach you, as opposed to actually just how to use Windows and Linux, the command line, and so on, which are all valuable skills, but they're not as important as having the fundamentals, right? And at one of the recent NCSG events, I was speaking about how if you're able to get an item in a video game onto a button you're not supposed to, you can then override memory addresses, right? Which then influences what other items you have in the game. And unfortunately, the people who didn't have that fundamental background got completely lost on the part when I started talking about writing into memory, you know? So I do think that the fundamentals are important. And if you don't learn that at university, the jobs are probably not going to teach it to you. They're just going to have the assumption that you already know that. So
you mentioned earlier that you had to do a bit of upskilling sort of external to university before you felt ready, for lack of a better word. In 2022, what do you think the missing piece is for a uni student to get into cybersecurity, and where do they find that piece?
Well, I'd say that university misses practical system administration and practical software engineering skills.
Yeah.
To break those down, they do teach at university how to use like chmod and a couple of command line arguments, but they won't really teach you why you need to use these things or how to use Linux or why this needs to occur, right? So you're kind of given an operating system and you're given a couple of entry-level commands, but then you forget about them over the course of your degree until you move into the workforce. And then you're like, well, how do I navigate Linux at on the terminal, right? Let alone do anything cool like, you know, ipconfig or netsh. So now going on to the software engineering one, folk at university aren't particularly taught like enterprise practices, like what's the source code management tool? Like GitHub,
yeah.
GitLab, TFS, Bitbucket. I don't care. I'm agnostic. You use what you want to use, but you need to know one of them, right? Mm. And they all work off of Git, So that's not taught. And it's okay, because you're supposed to basically expect that graduates come out of it like having just put all their code in Dropbox or something, right? Mm. And or just run it locally. The best storage for your assignment is locally, you know, when it just where your computer crashes or the dog wheeze on it or something.
Yeah.
I'm scared of that with my puppy, actually. So he had a good nibble on the computer cables this morning, and I was like, oh no, don't do that, Rocco.
Yeah, no, I lost a USB-C cable last week to the same problem. Not your dog, my dog.
But yeah, it'd be kind of weird if it was my dog, but dogs are destructive. So
it's not ideal.
They're very good at offensive penetrate, like physical penetration testing, right?
So. Yeah, they're very disruptive. Another interesting piece of the puzzle when it comes to education is the rise in industry certs we've seen. Any recommendations down that path? Any recommendations around, I guess, just particular skills that are worth picking up that, yeah, they mightn't be an industry cert, but still relevant?
Yeah, for cybersecurity professionals, it's difficult to recommend industry certifications without understanding what pathway you want to go down, right? So telling someone to get a CISSP or a CISM is not relevant for a penetration tester, whereas telling a pen tester that they should get a CCAD, like a Kubernetes administrator, is probably not the most valuable use of their time either. I think broad-based certifications are good, like Security Plus or Net Plus. I think if you want to be a hacker, OSCP and OSWE are the way to go. I much prefer people doing OSWE because I think that there's a lot more value out of targeting web applications than there is about network security, but that's another conversation. But outside of certifications, which basically say, are you able to pass an exam? Which with OSCP and OSWE, it's a bit harder because the exams, you have to hack into a box, like a bunch of boxes, and write a report. So it's not a sit there and get someone to take your test kind of thing, right? So I think that clear written communication and clear presentation skills are some of the most lacking things in probably all of tech, right? Let alone cybersecurity. The amount of like 50 to 100 page risk and governance reports or penetration testing reports I've seen, that could be distilled down to something in like 10 and still relevant and contextual for the business. It's mind-boggling, right? So if you're able to actually write simply, don't worry about all the techie terms, because that you have to write for your audience. And if you're able to present that to the people it matters, then you're in a far better shape than like anyone who can just like hack the hell out of a web application, but then not communicate what that means to someone who's going to make decisions about securing it.
For sure. All right, so we're pretty well on the home stretch. One final thing I want to cover off is just around productivity. Personally, I've seen how many pies you have your fingers in. How do you keep on top of it all?
Yeah, good question. There's a couple of things. So probably the easiest one is to be incredibly judicious with meetings. They are one of the biggest time sinks that you can have in your day and in your week. If you have lots of meetings scheduled, you have almost no time to actually deliver, right? So it's fine if you're working for a big enterprise and you just want everyone to have consensus about some kind of thing. But the way I like to do things is to have a very clear and strict agenda and to keep people accountable to that and to make the meeting one quarter at a time so that there's a lot less of the fussing around friendly niceness. I still do it. I just don't do it for 30 minutes, right? So that doubles the amount of time you have in a day, right? So that's a great way of doing it. Another career hack is to just work really hard. Like everybody likes the whole 9-to-5, I need a work-life balance kind of thing. But if you want to get ahead, especially as a young professional, before anything catches up to you, like kids, marriage, and like you having to look after your parents and so on, just put the hard yards in. Do a 996, work incredibly hard, climb a career ladder really quickly, right? There's whether it's study outside of work or just delivering more things, you'll be noticed and you'll move faster, right? And I think the last thing is to have a very solid a process for how you do your tasks, right? I know that I have some friends who like bullet journaling. That doesn't work for me. I just have a lot of Kanban, stickers, just post-it notes on my desk.
Yep.
It's like a list of like 100 or something of them, just stacked up like this. And I have a look for them like once a week and then pick a couple of them and then just say, this is what I'm getting done today. And then I don't switch between tasks. I stay on the same one until it's delivered, because context switching is the worst thing you can do.
Yes.
So, and yeah, on that one in particular, emails, Slack, instant messages, text messages, it's very hard in a big enterprise to actually kind of say, hello, I'm ignoring you until 5 p.m. because I want to be productive, because we're humans. We don't want to feel like someone's ignoring me. Like, that won't work for you. But what you can do is maybe check them at lunchtime and be a little bit with your messaging back. Be, instead of just like a string of back and forth messages, have like a really detailed response that covers all of the points that that person's asking for, because then you've specifically allocated your time to that individual in a single block, and then you can move on to your other tasks. So there's a lot of like GTD, bullet journaling, Kanban, Kaizen, all of those kind of things come into play. But yeah, just work long hours, work hard, and be very sensible with sticking to your process, right?
Mm. Cool. Anything you think from a productivity perspective you could do better?
I need to hire people. That's a big one. If you can say no, I think that's a big one. You don't have to do everything. There's going to be a lot of tasks that are just not a good use of your time, not going to change the outcome. Sometimes they're just being nice to people. So you got to learn what things you can like commit to actually getting done and do those. But if you can't get something done, be very courteous to the person that you promise this thing to, and just say like, look, rather than just trying to push it off until, you know, they get resentful with you, just explain that it's just not possible. I'm sitting at a stage with my company that I'm getting a lot of work coming in, and I need to bring more people on board, juniors and principals, because I know that I can't commit to everybody about everything. So if you're looking, talk to me.
On that note, where do people find you?
Ah, yeah. NCSG.
Good start.
Yeah, I know. Nui Slack. I don't really do socials all that much because I work in cybersecurity. So
it's understandable.
I don't have an Insta. I have a LinkedIn, so you can look on there for Galar Cyber. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, just go to my website, www.galarcyber.com.au, and hit me up on the contact form, whether it's for recruitment or just for, you know, you need a problem and I can help you solve it, right?
Sweet. Sweet. Righto, I think that'll pretty well do us. Look, thank you so much for coming on. And to whoever you are out there, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.newitechpeople.com.au. Thank you.